Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Local Governments and Reason Giving Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 14, 2015, the Supreme Court issued its decision in T-Mobile South v. City of Roswell. This case concerns whether a document from a state or local government stating that an application has been denied, but listing no reasons for the denial, can satisfy the Communications Act's in writing requirement. In an opinion delivered by Justice Sotomayor, the court held that the written document issued by a state or local government denying the application for a cell tower does not need to contain the reasons for denial as long as the reasons for denial appear in some other written record, are clearly written, and are accessible to the applicant essentially contemporaneously with the written denial notice. Justices Scalia, Kennedy, Breyer, Alito, and Kagan joined the opinion of the court. Justice Alito filed a concurring opinion. Chief Justice Roberts filed a dissenting opinion, which Justice Ginsburg joined in full, and which Justice Thomas joined as part one. Justice Thomas filed a dissenting opinion. The judgment of the 11th Circuit was reversed, and the case remanded for further proceeding. To discuss the case, we have Megan Brown, who is a partner at Wiley Ryan. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Brown.
In T-Mobile versus City of Roswell, the court addressed a dispute between T-Mobile and a Georgia town over a proposed cell tower. There are lots of these cases in federal courts around the country, but rarely do they get to the Supreme Court. This case involved a circuit split and an undercurrent of federalism, so it piqued the court's interest. I represented an amicus in the case, the Chamber of Commerce, but the views expressed here are exclusively my own. The crux of the fight here was about how the 1996 Telecom Act limits local government processing of applications by carriers seeking to build wireless towers. The part at issue was Section 332(c)(7)(b)(3). Which says that denials by local governments of these permits have to be in writing and supported by substantial evidence contained in a written record. This case focused on the in-writing requirement, asking whether the city satisfied it by sending T-Mobile a short denial letter, which had no explanation of the basis for the denial. The City of Roswell lost at the Supreme Court 6-3, having violated the Telecom Act. The outcome was not a surprise after oral argument, but the lineup of decisions was interesting. The court's approach struck a middle ground of sorts, but led to a dispute that found Justice Sotomayor writing for a majority, while Chief Justice Roberts dissented, joined by Justice Ginsburg and Justice Thomas in part. Though Justice Alito concurred, he wrote separately, poo-pooing the difficulties faced by carriers and identifying arguments for local governments in zoning disputes. Notably, each opinion emphasized federalism. To put the decision in some context, it helps to understand why Congress imposed the in-writing requirement in the first place. The act limited local government power in response to the hostility of some localities to cell towers, which was slowing the expansion of wireless service. So Section 332 barred local governments from considering certain issues, it required local governments to follow some procedural requirements, and it offered carriers expedited federal court review of denials of their applications, giving them 30 days to get to federal court from a denial. Since then, carriers and some localities have been fighting about what the act means. Among other things, some localities resist providing detailed explanations of the reasons for a denial. Instead, they might issue short denial letters and leave it to the applicant to unpack the decision by relying on hearing records, statements, and papers. A record can contain voluminous input over years from applicants, experts, and residents on issues like aesthetics, local character, and alternative approaches. In some places, unfortunately, delay appears to be part of the strategy. The longer applications sit and the harder it is to get judicial resolution, the more likely an applicant will be to choose a different site or give up entirely. So this is the context in which T-Mobile sought 5 years ago to build its tower, which the city's own planning and zoning division said met all of the requirements in the city's ordinances. So the City of Roswell held a public hearing at which council members made varying statements and members of the public testified. After a vote, the application was unanimously denied. 2 days later, the city sent T-Mobile a letter which didn't explain the denial. This triggered the 30-day clock for T-Mobile to file suit. The minutes of the meeting were provided 26 days later. T-Mobile exercised its right to seek judicial review and filed suit. The district court concluded that Roswell hadn't complied with the in-writing requirement, but the 11th Circuit disagreed, finding that the denial letter was adequate because it was, after all, in writing. The Supreme Court granted T-Mobile's petition for cert to resolve a settled circuit split over this provision and its meaning. The city argued that its denial didn't violate the in-writing requirement because the reasons for its denial could be found in a separate written record, namely the minutes. T-Mobile argued that the written decision must itself contain both the disposition and its basis or reasons. The Solicitor General got involved in support of neither party. He laid out a middle ground, arguing that while the failure here to provide timely reasons mandated reversal, reasons do not always need to be provided in the written denial itself. At argument, some justices weren't convinced that the text mandated T-Mobile's approach, but many were troubled that a decision could rest on multiple grounds and not tell the applicant what was controlling. They understood the challenge that a judge would face in trying to discern the reasons for a decision from a sometimes lengthy and conflicting record. And many justices were unimpressed by the city's decision to provide the hearing minutes 26 days after its denial. So on January 14th, the court issued its opinion, with six justices finding that Roswell had violated federal law. In addition to resolving this particular and narrow question, the several opinions said many interesting things about administrative law and federalism. Justice Sotomayor wrote for six justices, including Scalia and Alito. She framed the decision as answering two questions. First, does the statute require local governments to provide reasons when they deny applications? The answer is yes. The court grounded this in the act itself. Two limitations were, one, the mandate that denials be in writing and supported by substantial evidence, and two, the corollary right to judicial review, which the court concluded could really only happen where the reasons are known. The court reasoned that a federal judge can't use well the familiar substantial evidence standard from administrative law if it can't readily tell the reasons for the action under review. The court's second question was whether the reasons must appear in the same writing that conveys the denial. To this, the court said no. Justice Sotomayor wrote that while the text and structure of the act make it obvious that localities have to provide reasons in writing, she couldn't locate in the act a command that localities have to provide those reasons in any particular document, as T-Mobile had urged. Reasons have to be stated clearly enough for judicial review, but they can be in detailed meeting minutes. The court agreed with the SG that written opinions may be more prudent and helpful, but that the act didn't require them. So far, so good for the city, but this is where the court's skepticism at oral argument rears its head. Several justices had been critical of the timing of the city's 26-day delay in sending the minutes. This helped the court conclude that localities can't stymie judicial review by delaying the release of their reasons, in whatever form they may come, substantially after they convey a written denial. The court wrote that because an entity may not be able to make a considered decision about whether to appeal, the locality has to provide or make available its reasons at essentially the same time as the denial. This is the part of the decision that will have the most practical consequence in the real world and is also an area of sharp disagreement. The dissenters, Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Ginsburg, and Justice Thomas, who partially joined the dissent, disagree with this timing obligation. Quite frankly, they think it's made up. It's not in the text. The dissent would conclude that a short denial letter meets the in-writing requirement. And while reasons have to be given, they would rule in favor of Roswell because the minutes were adequate even 26 days later. This decision will impose discipline on localities to play fairly and limit one avenue of gamesmanship. But as the justices noted, this case resolves just one of many disputed parts of the Telecom Act. For example, it didn't address whether the reasons, regardless of their form, are adequate here, leaving that to the courts below to decide. This, to me, is one of the case's more interesting aspects. It was notable that some justices, fully aware that litigation overciting will continue, went out of their way to express skepticism about the burdens faced by applicants and to identify other issues, seeming to want to toss local governments a lifeline. Justice Alito, for example, offered three administrative law principles that a local government could cite in litigation. Likewise, in disagreeing with the majority's timing requirement, the Chief Justice went out of his way to dismiss the idea that carriers are hurt by delays. He wrote that cell service providers are not mom-and-pop operations and that the local town council is not the star chamber. True enough. But this oversimplifies things. Localities have substantial power in these settings, and they sometimes play games, tying applicants up for years and making the bases for appeal hard to determine. Even if it's possible to seek review on an unclear record and just file a complaint that lists many possible violations of federal law, this is inefficient, costly, and unfair to litigants and the judges who get the cases. As the majority explained in its responsive footnote 3, this generates unfocused litigation, which would waste time and money. At the end of the day here, the court's opinion is not a game changer. It settles a circuit split over the in-writing requirement and imposes a bit more discipline on local governments. Notably, however, it shows the continuing importance of federalism in statutory interpretation, something for lawmakers to keep in mind as they consider how to promote federal policy by restraining state and local action.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.